been on a war to fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the wheel line, fight, fighting men, fought and died to be. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be warning. And you're running down my countrymen, you're walking on the fighting side of me. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a far and dive. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a far and dive keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. When you run down my country, man, you walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, one of the big news stories today was the confrontation in Portland, Oregon, between a people under the Proud Boys banner, proud, nationalistic, patriotic, and a motley collection of Antifa who strove mightily to injure and to perhaps even to kill. Earlier today, Donald Trump made a very interesting suggestion. He said he was considering labeling Antifa as a terrorist organization. Now, you know, I want to be very careful before I call people terrorists. In Canada, the definition of a terrorist is a person or group that uses serious acts of violence to promote its religious, political, or other views. So, serious acts of violence, and those are defined as murder, rape, bombing, kidnapping, etc. The violence of the Antifa might, in both the United States and Canada, might come fairly close to our definition of a terrorist. They are organized. These are not lone wolves. These are not just individual actions. These are organized, and these actions exist or occur with the purpose, the express purpose, of trying to intimidate or hurt, by hurting or even killing the people they see as their political opponents, which could be anybody from Maxime Bernier in Canada, to people like myself, the Canadian Association for Free Expression, people like Donald Trump and his supporters in the United States, and the acts of violence over the years, or reporters seem to be neutral or on the side of patriotic people in the United States, populists. So the violence perpetrated by the Antifa might well come close, at least to our definition of terrorists, and perhaps the American definition is looser, but they are organized, that's one thing. They behave in a criminal fashion, not just with the violence, but with the fact that they mostly go around masked. Going out masked, except for Halloween, is probably an indication of not intending any good. And that's exactly what the Antifa have done in both Canada and the United States. Now, we have laws in Canada which are not enforced, but the law in Canada is that you cannot go around masked, especially in the commission of a crime. You've already committed a crime if you have a gun and you walk into a bank, even if perhaps you don't actually hold it up, except on Halloween or going to a masked ball or something of that nature. To go around masked with a club in your hand, it should immediately be considered a crime and result in the arrest. So here's some of the reports from the Oregonian newspaper in Oregon. Right-wing activists and those protesting their presence converged on Saturday on Portland's downtown waterfront in a much-anticipated confrontation. And Donald Trump, brought Donald Trump into the fray, and Donald Trump, very much to his credit, said he's considering declaring Antifa a terrorist group, and I think that's long overdue. Police mostly succeeded in separating demonstrators on opposite ends of the ideological spectrum as members of the Proud Boy and counter-protesters arrived at Tom McCall Waterfront Park, and the police tried to keep them actually on either side of a river that goes through Portland. The Proud Boys gathered to condemn self-described anti-fascist activists, or Antifa, who publicly confront those they believe espouse racist or bigoted views and who have a large presence in Portland. Well, publicly confront, rather downplays it. Attack violently. The groups traded shouts of USA and go home Nazis during the sometimes tense face-off. You see many pictures there of the Antifa with their black bandana masks on. Skirmishes, pepper spray, and arrests on the city's east and west sides followed over the course of hours as crowds of mostly counter-protesters roamed the streets. Demonstrators dressed in black and masking their faces hurled mayonnaise and smashed windows of at least one shuttle bus carrying right-wing activists. In fact, there was one picture on TV of one of these Antifa with a hammer trying to hit people inside the bus. Police at one point declared a civil disturbance. There were 13 people arrested. I don't think they've as yet been broken down as to from which side. We wanted national attention. We got it. Joe Biggs, a Florida resident and former InfoWars staffer who organized the event, said, "Mission success. The Proud Boys describe themselves as patriots and Western chauvinists. A number of their members are supportive of racist or xenophobic sentiments." Well, it was xenophobic. You don't want your country invaded by foreigners. Participants also backed a U.S. Senate resolution to label Antifa as domestic terrorists, and that's sponsored by Texas Republican Ted Cruz. And if you're an American, get behind that. Contact your senator, or your two United States senators, and tell them you want them to support or sign on as a co-sponsor of Ted Cruz's labeling Antifa as domestic terrorists. Rose City Antifa, Portland's homegrown amorphous band of anti-fascist activists, called on supporters to turn out in opposition to the demonstration. A major consideration is being given to naming Antifa a organization of terror, the president tweeted. Portland's being watched very closely. Hopefully the mayor will be able to properly do his job. The mayor didn't like pointed out, and he snarked back. At the start of the demonstrations, concrete slabs and a line of police officers formed a barricade beneath the Morrison Bridge to separate the rival groups, with the Proud Boys and their supporters to the south and the counter-protesters to the north. Populist activists, some wearing body armor and helmets, burst into chants of USA, sang the national anthem, and tried to plant an American flag in the ground. That's perfectly decent and good behavior. Counter-protesters near the Battleship Oregon Memorial Marine Park varied from local Jewish, wouldn't you be surprised, marching band sporting bright yellow bandana costumes to protesters wearing all black. And there was some exchange of chants, etc. Portland police said officers seized multiple weapons from groups, including bear spray, shields, and metal poles. Joey Gibson, a local activist of the right-wing group Patriot Prayer, later arrived in the morning holding an American flag and wearing a red Make America Great Again baseball cap. About 9 minutes, the showdown dissipated and people went on the move. Police estimate that there were more 1,200 demonstrators altogether. There were reports of 6 injuries, all minor, thank heavens, and including a person officers found hurt and sent to hospital. So this was, I think, a big success for the Proud Boys and their supporters, a success for the police, in that they managed to keep the protesters apart, mostly. And that's what's expected. That is what we would expect of the police, that they keep the two sides apart. That is too often what does not happen, where police seem at times. Either through bad strategy or planning, or worse still, one fears in some cases actual collusion with the anti-racists, where they simply fail to keep the two sides apart, and with the result that people are injured or worse. So I think it's very positive that there is talk in the United States of declaring Antifa a terrorist organization. And this is something you can do. No, I don't mean you can declare them a terrorist organization, but you can help in the sense that you can talk this up. And that's very important. Talk this up. Go online. And try to get others to support this, and particularly to get the United States Senate to support it. Well, here is another what I call nothing burger. It comes from my own beyond horrible local newspaper, the Hamilton Spectator, or I like to call it the Hamilton Expectorator, as in Big Spit. And this is about a murder that occurred, two murders and presumably a suicide that occurred in Brampton, which is just north and west of Toronto, yesterday. Now, you have to know about Brampton. Brampton used to be an all-white European city with some Portuguese. About 35 years ago, it began to attract large numbers of East Indians and blacks. So it is now overwhelmingly a non-white city. It's another city we've lost. But okay, you sort of have to have that as background for this story. So let's see what the Canadian press says. Michelle McQuigg, a 51-year-old man, killed his wife and 13-year-old son Friday before taking his own life on a highway west of Toronto, police said. Peel Regional Police Constable Danny Martini offered few details. That's typical of the police, eh? You know, I mean, they obviously have the person's name, the victim's name. They've got the person whom the husband, the father, whom they've accused of murder. They obviously have his name. Well, why aren't they shared with us? Well, why is everything such an absolutely flipping state secret? Well, I'll tell you perhaps one reason here. And it's a very good guess. But anyway, okay, let's take the rest of the story. This is Danny Martini. I guess Danny's a female. She said the family members' identities are not being released to protect the privacy of the three surviving children and any other relatives trying to come to terms with what happened. Well, sad as it might be, I'm sure the children know that their parents were killed, or in the case of the father, offed himself. Why must this be a secret? Their privacy. Well, yeah, they're entitled to privacy. They're entitled to not have people coming around gawking at them, of course. But why is the public does not seem to have the right to know? Well, I'll tell you why. A hint. The trauma that is going on around this situation, it's a lot, Martini said at a news conference. And the usual blather. We're really looking to respect their wishes so that they can deal with and process the aftermath of all this. I mean, deal with the death. I'll tell you, cop talk sometimes is so convoluted. I mean, you really know when things are being covered up, when people can't even just articulate something simple. Martini said, officers received reports of a stabbing shortly after 6 a.m. on Friday. She said the call came from within the home, but did not specifically say who contacted the police. Why not? Responding officers soon found the body of a 53-year-old woman inside. She probably has a name, which they know. Martini described her as a mother of four, but offered no other details. My gosh, I'm surprised they even mentioned that she was a female. She said police also found a 13-year-old boy inside with life-threatening injuries. He was rushed to hospital, but was soon pronounced dead. Well, I guess he has a name too, but we're not going to be told it. The police started to track down the man believed to be responsible. We did have a male suspect that fled the scene, a residence in a vehicle, the policewoman said. This male has been identified as the father and the spouse of the victim. He did unfortunately take his own life. Well, maybe not so unfortunate. saves the state of trial. Martini said the man left his vehicle in a parking lot and walked to a nearby overpass before his body was found on a busy highway. But do you think maybe he jumped? She described the deaths as an isolated incident. What does that mean? Noting police are not seeking further suspects and there's no public safety risk here. Martini said that the teen victim was the youngest of the family's children, noting two of them are adults. She described the family as longtime residents of the Brampton neighborhood. Okay, I'll give you my very informed best guess. They're East Indians. And this wouldn't be the first time in the past few months that there's been a tragedy. There was a marital dispute, and an East Indian man kidnapped his daughter. I believe he killed her. It was from this Brampton area, and then killed himself. He drove her about 60 miles north. Okay, well, why not tell us this? You know, all government bodies in Canada like to beat their gums about the fact that they are transparent. Well, they are about as transparent as a London fog. They're not transparent. The public, frankly, has a right to know. You know what they're doing. Almost certainly these people are East Indians, and we will eventually find out. They don't want us to think badly of them. Well, now, any reasonable person would say, look, not all East Indians, practically, you know, indeed relatively few, perpetrate such acts of violence in the family. I don't think reasonable people will unfairly judge them and say they're all like that. No, they're not all like that. But there is an element that's like that. This homicidal family violence. Whether the police have a motive now or not, we don't know. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. It might take a couple of days where they have to talk to the other family members, especially the two children who are adults, apparently. And they may have a much better idea of why it was that the father killed the mother and the teenage boy and then killed himself. We don't know. But this sort of homicidal violence within the family seems to occur unusually often among some of these East Indians. And once again, it comes back, and granted, they don't all behave like this, of course, but it comes back once again to the choice of people to coming to Canada, the choice of immigrants. And the previous Conservative government under Stephen Harper talked about barbaric practices and wanting to curtail them. When she ran for the Conservative Party leadership 2 years ago, Member of Parliament Kelly Leach, a medical doctor, wanted to vet immigrants for their adherence or knowledge of and adherence to Canadian values. Well, she, although the polls supported her, Canadians by about 70%, overwhelmingly thought that's a good idea. I mean, it's logical. Or flip it around. Why would you bring people to this country who don't share Canadian values? And it's stupid. Anyway, she didn't win. And she didn't win, for other reasons. But she wanted immigrants to be vetted. In other words, interviewed to determine whether they shared Canadian values. You know, if they believe in, family honor killing. You know, like if your wife disobeys you, you've got a right to snuff her. If your teenage daughter, and this has happened, wants to dress in a, you know, modern day style with a, you know, halter top and a short skirt, doesn't want to wear a hijab when she goes to school, you've got a right to kill her. And there, in fact, in the high school I taught at over a quarter of a century ago, a girl was killed 3 years ago by her father and her brother. Murdered because apparently she was dating somebody who was not Muslim, and they didn't like the way she wore or the clothes she wore to school. Now, people who believe that honor killing is justified, and there's that subculture that runs through much of the Middle East, they don't have any place in Canada. Those are not our values. And very much to his credit,
the leader of the People's Party of Canada, Maxime Bernier, made it quite clear as he revealed his party's immigration policy a few weeks ago in Mississauga, Ontario, that his party would insist on an interview in person with each potential immigrant. You see, right now, it's possible to immigrate to Canada without a face-to-face interview. I mean, it's that Mickey Mouse deliberately set up so that the system fails. Because the cultural Marxists in the Liberal Party cannot jam third worlders into this country fast enough. They want to hasten our demise, our replacement, so that before 2050, the European founding settler people of this country will be a minority. That's what the game is. So, they have no interest in vetting people for Canadian values. But Maxime Bernier said he would fund the hiring of new Canadian Security Intelligence Service, RCMP, and others in the CBSA or Immigration Department to implement that. That before a person, newcomer, is given the green light to come to Canada, they have to convince us that they share Canadian values. And if they don't, that's fine. But they're not coming to Canada. And that of course, would not be the only qualification. I'd say every bit as important as a criminal records check and the fact that the newcomer has a needed skill for Canada is that person can adhere to Canadian values. Because how else do you build unity in a country if we don't have the same values? That I suspect is, as much as anything, is why we've so far not been told much, other than the ages and the sex of the victims and the killer. Friday, there was a shooting in the West Toronto, a daylight shooting, which was ended in a fatality. And for once, we actually got something more than a nothing burger from the Metropolitan Toronto Police. In fact, I suspect because there was a daylight shooting, and many people saw something, the police put out an APB for a person for a black person in a white van. Now, that I found helpful for once. The type of information, at least as reported by the newspapers, of other shootings are almost useless. I think I referenced one last week. I believe it was last Friday, a little over a week ago, up in the airport strip. This is what I heard on my local radio station. Police are investigating a homicide. A man was shot dead at 3:30 in the morning in the hotel parking lot. I think an alarm bell goes off there, doesn't it? And then in an airport strip hotel at the corner of Carling View and Dixon Road. I thought, well, does the hotel not have a name? Police are seeking, two suspects, seen driving away in a white van. Okay, that's a story. All sorts of questions. When I read online, I did find the name of the hotel, and that was the Comfort Inn. Okay, well, that I would say is not that important in detail, but, I used to teach journalism and news story writing, and it's absolutely imperative. The story has to give the who, what, where, when, why, and how. And if the why isn't known, then it's ought to be specifically acknowledged that, for whatever reason, it's not known. The who, what, where, why, when, and how. Okay, a man was shot dead. He must have had a name, right? Okay, well, that wasn't given. The police are looking for, I believe it was two suspects. All right, two men, actually, in a white van. Well, can we not say any more about the man? How would you know they were men? Well, obviously, they were either seen by somebody or seen on camera, on video surveillance. Well, if you know they're men, I think they said young men. If you know they're young and they're men, you probably know their color. Like, who are we looking for? Well, we're not told. And this is typical because, and the media is much to blame for this, actually. The police, too. But because the entire establishment is covering up the fact the crime, violent crime in the city of Toronto, is mostly a black thing. The blacks constitute about 7 to 8% of the population of the city or the GTA, the city of Toronto. The city of Toronto. Okay. The all sorts of evasions are used. We're told it's gang violence. Yeah, it is gang violence, mostly. But what type of gangs? Well, we're not told. I'll tell you why we're not told. I was talking to a man who also ran for mayor of Hamilton last year, Edward Grayson. He's an unusual guy. He's he arranges business financing, so he's a smart man. He comes from an old wealthy family. He's a man with many interesting eccentric opinions, and you know, he immediately said, black and Somali gangs. I'd said black gays. He said yes, and Somalis, and he's quite right. Black and Somali gangs are the ones that are perpetrating probably all of the 20 shootings in the past week in the city of Toronto. Well, why are we not privileged to know that? Well, I'll tell you why. Because it's a little bit inconvenient to the narrative that diversity is our greatest strength. You see, if the pattern were honestly admitted that most of the 20 shootings in the past 10 days in Toronto, that they were almost certainly all perpetrated by blacks, and in most, if not all cases, the victims were black. Well, that puts an entirely different light on things. First of all, it calls into question the activities of black leaders, especially people like Black Lives Matter. Instead of ragging on the police or nattering on about racism, why not deal with your own community? If black lives matter, and I would agree they matter, why are you not lecturing your own people? Stop killing each other. That would seem reasonable. Why not? Why is it? Because it's far easier to natter on about racism. Blame the police. Blame society. Blame racism. Blame colonialism. But it's not the police who are gunning down blacks. It's not white people who are gunning down blacks. It's blacks who are killing one another. Now, instead of the sort of conversation that lets the perps off the hook. That's right. It lets them off the hook. It lets them divert the discussion from what's really going on. It's gang violence. Blacks killing blacks. Well, then why are they doing that? And I'd be saying to black leaders, never mind another complaint about racism. What are you doing? What are you doing to your own in your own community? Are you reading the Riot Act?
to your young people? Are you informing the police of what you know of planned violence, if you know something of that nature? You know, hold them to account. Unfortunately, much of our establishment is too cowardly to do that, too afraid of the pushback, which initially would be, oh, that's racist, you're blaming the victims. No, I'm not blaming the victims. The victims are already injured or dead. We're blaming the people who made them victims, and those people are your own people. They're black. That's one thing. And of course, the other thing is that the entire rotten cultural Marxist establishment in Canada has a lot of covering up to do. They don't want to admit that their immigration policy, the selections that they have made, are failed. It's a mess. Here's I guess it's called a poster or a meme on Facebook, which I like, put out by Canadian Redneck Patriots. It's a picture of our trust fund kid prime minister. We lied about helping natives. We lied about helping veterans and seniors. We brought unknown numbers of Islamic terrorists into Canada. We plan to raise the carbon tax 5 times higher than it is now. We ran up the debt into the trillions, higher than ever before. We vilified anyone who has a different opinion. We raised taxes across the board, hurting 90% of Canadians. We plan to bring millions more from Islamic countries here. Are you stupid enough to vote for us again? I like the sense of humor. A lot can be said with humor, and that's one of the reasons why the cultural Marxists just hate humor. I'm not saying they don't get it. I mean, sometimes perhaps they don't get it, but they are so self-righteous. They can't imagine the people laughing at them. Here's an interesting from Holland. Dutch ban all face coverings, including burqa, on public transport and in schools. That's right. You can't have people running, coming around with full face cover, you know, like with a mask. This is really perverted. I'm going to try to describe it. This is a boy, short hair. I guess it's a boy. We're told it's a boy. He's 9 years old, with purple lipstick, purple-pink eyebrows, a rainbow color, and exaggerated on, I think it must be an attachment, on his eyelids, a purple something, a white wig, and a tight-fitting dress. Kid's pudgy, so a bit of a belly, and I guess something that would fill, not very well, but slightly fill up the cups of the top of the dress. Would we do this to little girls? If not, why are we allowing this for little boys? Some of us think that letting your kid look like a rainbow bright sassy hooker is not ideal of being open and accepting parents. This is on a par or worse than the Baki Bazi. Maybe letting this kid, 9-year-old boy, makes headlines after his drag show debut at LA Pride Parade. And he has an activist mommy. She should be charged with child abuse. It's disgusting. Bernie Sanders apparently said that all of his family died in the Holocaust. Well, that's always good for a bit of sympathy, isn't it? They all died. Well, hang on a sec. Just before we drag out the Kleenex and ball up a storm. Bernie Sanders, first of all, was born in the United States. His parents live in the United States. Right? They're dead now. But they didn't get holocausted. They weren't in Germany in World War II, or in Poland. I believe he has brothers and sisters. Well, all, clearly they didn't die in the so-called Holocaust. You know, it's important to call these people up on this, and that was one of the great strengths of Ernst Sundel and his legal team in two big battles 30 years ago in Toronto, the false news trials. Incredibly courageous lawyer, Doug Christie, actually cross-examined so-called Holocaust survivors, and he just absolutely humiliated them. One had apparently been at Auschwitz, or so he said. And he said he knew who was being gassed on any given day by the color of the smoke. Cremated. The color of the smoke. I mean, it almost sounded like a good old racial joke. I forget what it was. It was, if it was black, it was Jews. If it was, you know, gray, it was gypsies. If it was something. I mean, the human body, regardless of race, once in the cremation process, generates any smoke at all, and I'm told it doesn't, or very little, smoke would be all of one color. There wouldn't be one color. There would be for Jews and other color. And this what was given as serious testimony, and Doug Christie's excellent cross-examination skills made witnesses like this look like the idiots they are, and rightly so. And this is what has to be done with people like Bernie Sanders, that he should be confronted on this nonsense. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I'm going to take my musical break now. I'm going to maybe change the pace a little bit and have one of the stars of the Grand Ole Opry, but also the TV show that was so popular in the 70s and 80s and 90s, Hee Haw, Down Home Country, Good Times, Fun, Humor. This was Buck Owens, Buck and his Buckaroos. He's from Bakersfield, California. Well, he's dead now, but Buck brought the Bakersfield sound to Nashville. This is...
Well, I'll bet you I'm gonna be a big star.
Buck Owens and Act Naturally.
Oh, the sun's gonna shine in my life once more. Love's gonna lift here again. Things are gonna be the way they were before. Love's gonna lift here again. Love's gonna lift here. Love's gonna lift here. Love's gonna lift here again. No more loneliness. I hear bells are ringing, I hear birds are singing. Love's gonna live here again. I hear bees are humming, and I know the days are coming. Love's gonna live here again. Love's gonna live here. Love's gonna live here. Love's gonna live here again. No more loneliness, only happiness. Love's gonna live here again. Love's gonna live here again.
I've got a tiger by the tail. wheels, and it looks like I've got a tiger by the tail. I've got a tiger by the tail, it's plain to see. I won't be much when you get through with me. While I'm losing weight and I'm turning mighty pale, looks like I've got a tiger by the tail.
Thank you.
where you belong. The love that I knew is living again, and nothing else matters. We're together again, and nothing else matters. We're together again.
Great song by Buck Owens. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com.
Of yore from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf.